Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for the needlework artist. And my guest this week, Carolyn Mitchell of Carolyn Mitchell Designs. Carolyn, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Glad to have you. All right. If the burning question right out of the gate, you used to have a shop for many years called Mrs. Twitchett's Eye. Where did that come from?
I did. And it actually comes from an old English nursery riddle. And it went, Mrs. Twitchett had but one eye and a long tail that she let fly. Every time she passed through a gap, a bit of her tail got caught in a trap. What am I?
You got me.
A needle pulling thread.
Of course.
Of course.
Oh, that's great. So then that was the name of your business. Oh, excellent.
Yes, 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 yes. And it's still part of my handle, because if you have my email, Twitchett is still part of the handle.
Yeah.
So I haven't left it totally.
How many years did you have the shop?
I had the shop for 20 years. I started out in Whitehorse, Yukon, and I had it there for just a little over a year. My husband was then transferred to Fort St. John, B.C., and so I started up again, and again, I just squeaked out a year when we got transferred to Winnipeg, and so I opened it up again and closed it in 2008, and so it came to a grand total of 20 years.
Boy, that's wanting it if you're going to move the shop twice, three times and start it all over. Wow.
Yes, it was important to me. I enjoyed the shop and I enjoyed what I did. And I had the support of my husband, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's so key. Yeah, most just about every successful person in this hobby has a spouse that is a difference maker. Yeah. The shop, mostly needlepoint?
In Canada, you couldn't have just a straight needlepoint shop. So, of course, I carried cross stitch. I carried all the Hardanger supplies. I carried smocking. We gave classes, which was the big draw. I had classes going every day, quite often afternoon and evening. So, if you couldn't make it in the afternoon, you could make it to the evening class. So I tried to keep them simultaneously as we traveled along. So there was always something going. We did Kumahumi braid. We did, anything that came along, we tried. So it wasn't like we just, narrowed it down. So we did lots of different things. Pulled thread. I had some wonderful teachers I had one teacher that was a beautiful stump work teacher. Oh. And just did phenomenal stuff. And I had some of my staff, we would do clubs so that we would make an afghan, for example. For a year, they worked on an afghan, or they worked on a Hardanger tablecloth, or they worked on Christmas ornaments. So we always had things going all the time.
Wow. Holy smoke. So if you knew what a needle and thread was, your shop was the place to go. Wow.
Pretty well. I would bring in guest teachers as well. So, I had Barbara Kershaw come in and teach Schwamm embroidery. Anna Marie Winter came in to teach canvas. Many of our Canadian teachers would come in as guest teachers once a year, at least, to, just round out the programs.
Right. So did you end up doing most of the teaching then?
I taught most of the Hardanger and most of the canvas work and most of the black work. I could do other things for sure, but I can't do it all, especially if I was designing, which I was for both Hardanger and canvas work. I was doing all the designing, so people would be inspiring me to come up with new designs all the time. And so, I mean, it was like a race trying to keep caught up the last few years.
Oh my. Wow. And doing all that and running a shop with all the business part too. Oh my.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the last 8 years, my husband was retired. So he took over the accounting end of it for me, which really, you know, makes a big difference because that was a real headache to just stay on top of it all the time.
Yeah. Any shop owner will tell you that that business end of things gets in the way of the actual fun so often. Yeah.
That's correct. And you have to stay on top of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you get behind on that and things really come apart in a hurry. Yep.
Yeah.
So you had a pretty good size shop then to have that many classes going.
Yes, I'd have one class going. I had a classroom at the back and the store at the front. Hmm. And, I think it was just a little over 1,000 square feet, but we had it packed in there pretty good.
Yep. So let's just go back to the beginning then. How do you get involved in stitching? I mean, to be able to handle the variety of techniques that you know, what started it all for you?
Well, I found out that my mother's family was quite involved in needlework and sewing and quilting and things like that. And so I had an aunt who sort of took me under her wing and taught me how to do needlepoint, and then she taught me how to do bargello. But we were living, you know, 1,500 miles apart. So I was in Winnipeg at the time, and I found out that there was an embroidery shop downtown called Leonida's Embroidery Studio. And so off I went to find out what that was all about. And she too had classes at that time. This was in the 70s. And so I signed up for classes. And then the next thing I knew, she had me signing up to belong to the Embroiderers Association of Canada, and which is known as EAC. And they were having a seminar. So, Carolyn, you've got to, you know, come to seminar. And I was a young mother at that time. And, you know, with fairly young kids. And the next thing I knew, I was taking Audrey Francini's Cruel course at seminar. and I do cruel. I haven't taught it, but I certainly can do cruel. And so that was sort of the kickoff. And then belonging to the organization, to the guild, the guild I belonged to, I think there was only one other person around the same age of me, which would have been late 20s, early 30s. And everybody else, well, they thought that, you know, the two of us were just, you know, ripe for the picking.
Right.
and so every month we learned something new. We learned how to do pulled thread. We learned how to do smocking. You know, we learned how to do crewel. Like I said, we learned how to do canvas work and how to do Florentine and how to do, you know, you name it. Every month was something different. So you got a pretty good handle of what you liked and what you didn't like. And so, you know, I can smock. Matter of fact, I taught smocking in the store because nobody else was around that was willing to do it. And pulled thread, I can do it. Can do it great. No, I can't do I can't do coral knots. I'm left-handed, and so.
Oh well, welcome to the club. Yeah.
So some of the knots are hard for us to do, but everything else I can do. You know, and so I was going along minding my own business when my husband came home one day and decided that we were moving to Whitehorse because the company offered him a job up there. So with that, my kids were just going into school, and I was thinking of going to university and becoming a teacher. Mm. And so going to Whitehorse meant that I wouldn't be able to do that. They don't have a university there.
Now, Whitehorse is in Yukon?
Right on. Oh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's fairly isolated then?
Well, the town itself provides lots of opportunities, but it's a long ways to go to the next town. You know, there's not a lot going on. You know, it's beautiful. And it's really good for outdoor enthusiasts and that. So I talked to Leonida and I said I was thinking of maybe becoming a needlework teacher. And she said, well, I think you've got it. So she said, here's the address and good luck. And so we moved to the Yukon, and after a couple of months there, I got a hold of the people at the, let me see now, how does it go? Because it's got a long name. It's the Embroiderers Association. No, that's Canada. It's National Standards Council of American Embroiderers. And it was based out of, I believe, Philadelphia. And the actual organization did close up in about 1996. But before that, they would have been a forerunner to A&G, and I believe A&G sort of amalgamated with them when they closed their doors.
Oh.
And so I took my courses from one teacher out of Pittsburgh. Her name was Mary Schreier, and I put in a resume with, you know, a portfolio of what I could do. And so they put me into the intermediate level. So I only had to do two levels. So I did the intermediate level with Mary Schreier, and she was wonderful. Anytime I needed something, you know, she would tuck a couple books into the package and send it up with me. And she'd say, if you want the books, send the money back. If you don't want the books, send the books back. And which is, you know, unheard of these days.
Right,
I don't think
right.
anybody would do that these days. And then my second
and this
teacher,
would have been, yeah, no internet, no this, websites. Yeah.
No websites, no internet. I started this in 1980. We went up in 82. So I'm going to say probably the end of 82, beginning of 83 is when I started that. And then when I finished that course, and my courses, each lesson had to be mailed down and back and traveling by mail.
Yep.
And so then my advanced course, my teacher was Martha Davenport, and she was from Hartford, Connecticut. And so my lessons literally traveled across the continent.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, Connecticut to the Yukon. And one time, lesson five came in a clear plastic bag with all kinds of, you know, that gray stuff they put into envelopes back then.
Yes, yes.
That yucky stuff.
Oh, no,
well,
they just threw it all in the bag.
Oh, it was all in this plastic bag, and they handed it to me at the door, and they said, we hope nothing got cut. And so I opened it up to outdoors, so I didn't
yeah.
have that stuff through the house. And everything was fine, you know, but the bag was just shredded.
Right.
But everything came through fine. And then when I was done, I had to write an exam, and it was a 4-hour exam. And I'm happy to say I passed.
Yep.
And, so then, at that point, that was 1987 that I finally finished. And so
So you're doing all this and raising kids at the same time too. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I also, well, after that, I decided that I wanted to have a shop. So it was 1988 that I actually started my shop in Whitehorse. And I could operate out of my home. So I operated out of my home in Whitehorse as a small business.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, you know, just the infancy at that time. And it worked out good. I mean, again, I started out with having classes, but in between all that, I also started the guild up there.
Uh-huh.
So there is a guild still in the Yukon. So it's quite a bit smaller now, like most guilds these days. But we did a good little job, and I used the same format that we had in Winnipeg. So because it worked so well, and the women enjoyed it. And by then, seminars were popular, and everybody was going off to different seminars, you know, each year. So they got lots of opportunities. So when I opened up in Fort St. John, like I said, I only lasted for a year because of the transfer again.
Right.
But again,
well,
I
bet they hated to see you go. Oh,
they said they did. I don't
okay.
know. they said they did. Yes. So, you know, but by because of the courses that I took, they were very rounded courses, and you had questions on history, and you had to do all your own charting. And at that time, I wasn't using the computer. It was all done with pencil and ruler and graph paper. Uh-huh. And then you also had to do samples of all your stitches, of course, and you always had a project at the end. And when I was doing my advanced one, I had to do beginner, intermediate, and advanced courses for each lesson that I did. So, you know, it couldn't be just one project. You had to do three projects in each course. And or each lesson, and there was 10 lessons. So
So by the time you're done with this, you've got plenty of design experience then.
You're doing a pretty good, yeah, you're doing quite a bit of design experience as you're going. It wasn't until about, I think 2003 or so is when I actually started using the computer, but I had somebody else doing it before that for me, you know, to put it in a nice copy.
Yeah.
But now I do everything on the computer. I do all my charting, and I enjoy charting just about as much as I do stitching. I really do enjoy that portion of it. It's kind of fun to see all the stitches mesh and in together and make them fit together.
Yeah.
I find that a lot of brain power to make sure you know how to do things. And of course, back when I did mine, Gene Hilton didn't have all those wonderful round and curves and circles and ovals that she sort of brought out just as I was basically finishing up my course. So when I got introduced to her work, I really enjoyed, you know, it opened up a whole new avenue.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah. She opened some doors, no doubt about that. That's the thing about her work. It still holds up today. Boy, that's still, when you see a Gene Hilton design, that's an excellent challenge, and they still hold up. I mean, that's just one of those talents that comes along every now and then.
Yes, yes. She just opened up the whole world, and then you get all the other people who designed after her, like Curdy Briggs, who does a beautiful job of expanding and changing, you know, her Jean's work.
Right.
And that's how growth is done, is for one person opens the door and the next person walks through.
Right.
And excellent on Jean's part. And I always enjoyed talking to her. I never met her. But I often talk to her because, of course, I had to order her books because I was teaching her designs.
So then you get certified, but then Gene Hilton comes along. And so now you can take things to a whole new level then.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. I love my certificate. It says that I'm a graduate from the state of Pennsylvania.
The state?
The state of Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, did you start out with your design work? Was it primarily needlepoint, or did, because these days you mix all kinds of things. So was it primarily needlepoint at the time, and then you started mixing things in, or how did that evolve?
Well, when I decided that I wanted to be a needlework teacher, I had to decide what field I wanted to go into. I had a choice of crewel or surface embroidery. I had a choice of canvas work embroidery or counted thread embroidery. And for me at the time, crewel was the big popular one that was going on in the early 80s with Audrey Francini going around and teaching beautiful designs. And so I thought to myself, okay, I've got to look into the future here, you know, with my crystal ball. And all of a sudden I thought, up until then, canvas work per se was really just needlepoint. You had a little bit, Maggie Lane and Sue Lance were doing, you know, more canvas work stitches. So was Catherine Ayers. But they were not that popular, at least not in Canada. Needlepoint was the popular one. And we had charted needlepoint in Canada. with Jean McIntosh and Babs Freeman and Alice Godwin and Helen Burgess, and they were sort of across the country. Mm-hmm. And we could buy these as kits. And that's what I really started out doing was these needle points. And they'd be pictures of Blue Boy, Red Boy, Pink Lady,
you know,
the Gaines.
The standard,
The Gaines, yeah.
Let me interrupt you here. You make a distinction in your mind between needlepoint and canvas work.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. How does that come about? You're pretty clear about that.
Yeah. Oh, well, to me, needlepoint is basically basket weave, continental stitch, half cross stitch, that slanted stitch that goes one direction.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and then you make it like in the kits that we used to do here, we would have it on Penelope canvas. So we would do the needle point in the wool, and then we would do the faces and hands in petit point, which would mean that we would divide the Penelope canvas down to four. You know, we would split it and work with it. So it would be, you know, more distinguished so that the faces looked more real than the bulkiness of wool. And so that's needlepoint. And then canvas work is all the other wonderful stitches that you can do, because then you're going over. You don't necessarily use Penelope canvas. Very rare to use Penelope canvas because of that ridge that it would create. So you would have a large variety of stitches to use. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of canvas work stitches.
Right.
A lot of people distinguish also, I call Florentine embroidery. And I think part of that is because that's what we called it in the courses that I took, which were quite British through these standard National Standard Council of American Embroiderers. It was very British based courses that we took.
Uh-huh.
So they were called Florentine. They were not called Bargello.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I also had an Italian professor in one of my classes, and she said, well, Bargello really stands for jail in Italian. You know, that because that's what it was at one time. Instead of a museum, it was a jail at one time. And so that's where the word Bargello comes from.
That's interesting, because I remember back in the early days having a couple of books, and the word Florentine was used with some frequency, mm-hmm. but to me it was always mm-hmm. Bargello or however you say it. I shouldn't say Bargello because that sounds so American, but in the Penelope canvas, you remind me, I had a business trip to Austria, would have been 82, 83. And there was a needlepoint shop over there. And I bought a painted canvas on Penelope that I had no business buying. I mean, I should not have spent the money at all. But, you know, it was a painted canvas from Europe. Well, how cool is that? I brought that back. I kept it for years. And never did anything with it. It was the standard basket of flowers kind of thing, you know.
Uh-huh.
Nothing fancy. And I one day I just threw it away. I'll never do this. And I tell you, I kicked myself ever since. But see, I didn't have anybody who could teach me how to take advantage of the Penelope canvas.
Yes.
And so I really didn't know how to tackle it. And to this day, I think if I had that now, that would be fun to tackle because of what you can do with Penelope canvas. But I just never, I had to have someone say, well, this is what you do with that. And because you can really add some dimension. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. My mother-in-law went to Europe and she brought me back a printed canvas just like that on the Penelope. And this thing was 30 inches one direction and 55 inches the other direction. And I every January I would get it out and work on it because it was, you know, it was sort of like, this is the January piece that I had to do.
Yeah.
And then I'd put it away at the 31st of January, never look at it again until the next January. And the year that we moved up to Whitehorse, we ended up in a hotel. We ended up staying in a hotel while we were waiting for our home. And so I had brought that along with me, and I actually finished it. And I've gotten it framed, and it's very nice.
And you still have it today?
Oh yes, oh yes, it's framed and up, and yeah, it's
55
done.
Inches long. Wow.
Yeah, 30 inches deep, and a picture of a river, and looks like a grain building, it's all gray. But it's beside the river, so I would think it's something that they've stored food in. And of course, a woman with a child, and a guy in a boat, and trees and clouds. And,
the standard scene, yeah.
The standard pastoral scene. Yeah.
Oh, but man, if I'd finished that, yeah, that one would be hanging on the wall no matter where I lived. Yep.
Yeah.
You were developing these designs and mm-hmm. able to add in Jean Hilton and. Yes. Her stitches, yeah. and then your designs were really starting to evolve then.
That's right. The first time I ever taught for seminar for Canada, like, was in St. John's, Newfoundland, and it was actually Hardanger that I taught. I taught a designing of your own Hardanger, and I also taught a project one. So I had two courses that I taught. From there, people knew that I was doing some canvas work. And so the Eastern Guilds, because, of course, I was out west, the Eastern Guilds then decided that they'd like me to come down and teach canvas work. So the first official design that I would say that I published was August Evening, which is one of the months. It's the first month.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I taught down in Newfoundland and PEI and New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. So then from there, when I was down there, it was the fall, and we were flying over the trees quite low between the two places. And, of course, I just fell in love with the autumn colors. So then I did September Morn. And when I returned, it was wintertime, and I was doing some traveling, and then I did December Dawn. And I thought, well, I got to do something in the spring. So I did April Flowers. And then I was done with that. I went on and did something else. And then I slowly went back, and somebody said, well, when are you going to do the rest of the months? And I thought, oh, really?
Yeah, you started it. You started it.
I started it. And I'm trying to think when I actually finished. March Moods was the last one. And I think it's dated around 213 or 214, somewhere there. It took me a long time to do the rest of the month, but I did them, like I did September, I did November next, and I always use November as the example because I had no intentions of doing November or anything, and my husband used to go to the border because we had our stuff come to the border because it would come so much faster. Uh-huh. Then he'd do the paperwork, clear it for customs, and bring it up. And he always did it on Thursdays, and the ladies all knew that. So, and he would come in, and he'd work in the back, and then he'd bring the stuff out for us to see. And this particular day, I had an order from Caron, and the threads all came out. And then I had an order from... Silken Colors. I'm trying to think what I think that's. Can't think of what her name is. Cece was the owner. Anyhow, her threads and ribbons came out. She had silk ribbon. So her silk ribbon in soft pinks and creams fell against Caron's Gobi Sands. And then the Kranich happened to come, and an antique gold landed there. And I looked at it, and I thought, that looks like it should be November. And Mill Hill had some charms from Mill Hill. One was a little pink rose. I said, perfect, November rose. I've got to do it. And I sat down, and I did it in a week.
Oh,
you know, and it's one of my favorite designs to this day. I really like it. So then I sort of sat with those five. And then I did October and January very quickly up together. They just sort of, you know, I just finished one and did the other. And then February came along, and then I just sort of stopped. Because <You know? laughs> then I had May and June, March, May, and June to do. And it was like, oh, I did July somewhere in there, too. July came along pretty good, too.
Yeah.
But The others sort of sat for a long time before I could really, because it had to be something that would move me for that month to do
right,
it.
Right,
the
sure.
Same with all my designs. I have to have a variety of things that happen and come together that creates the design. And if I'm, if I have to take a long time working on it, it's likely not going to turn out as good as with the passion of when I do it. I just finished a piece just before my husband passed away, and I didn't start it until the end of May, and I had it done by the first part of July, and I've called it The Fire Within, and it's very different for me. It's reds and oranges and yellows, and it's a geometric, but it's a rectangle more based on square, and it's just different. So I'm just starting to, I haven't written it yet or charted it. You asked me in my notes, how do I come about? I usually take a piece of paper and I sketch out what I want to do. And it can be as on something like a napkin or, a scrap piece of paper, or I could do it on the computer just to sort of give me my layout and my lines, and then I write in what stitches I want to use and, what colors I want to use, and I put everything all together.
Do you find yourself doing that wherever you're at, that something will come to you and you have to scratch it down some way?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. The kids are used to that.
Well, the kids just roll their eyes now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
My two daughters are teachers, so they kind of understand at times.
Okay, well, we'll take that. We'll take that.
Yeah.
And that isn't that the curse of the designer? If you do anything related to months or seasons, you can't just do one or two. You have to do them all.
That's right. You can't. That's correct. Yeah.
Whether you want to or not, you have no choice. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. It's, I did a book called My Seasons, and it's the fall season is my favorite season. And so I had no problem doing that one. I had no problem doing spring, and I actually had no trouble doing summer. But winter is just blah up here.
Yeah, yeah.
The only color I could think of is pale blues and whites and silver. And so you're going, oh, what can I do to make this? And so out of the book, that one is not my favorite. I like the other three, but that one's that forced one, and it's not the same.
Yeah, I have to say that the 12 months series, looks like they're all 5x5 inch on 18 count.
All 88.
Yeah, that's a tremendous series. It really is. There's everyone different in its own way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What I did was with that one is when I taught them in the store, I used to sell boxes with them. Mm-hmm. And so people would buy a box, and then they could make, 4 or 8 or all 12 or whatever. And then they could just flip them and change the box each season, each month.
First thing I thought of when I saw them, I have a box. Yep. I have a box I bought that I've never used. It's probably a 5x5 opening. And the first thing I thought is, I think there's the use for that box right there, all 12 of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. A lot of people do the birthdays, they'll do their birthday and their spouse's birthday and the kids' birthdays, and they'll do birthdays and do it that way. So,
beautiful. That's a beautiful series. It really is. But,
thank you.
Yeah. You started it. Now you got to do all 12. No choice. Way it goes. Yeah. You describe in your website, you describe your encyclopedic knowledge of threads, and I can tell just in what you've been sharing so far, you really seem to have a grasp of the threads. And I can just tell.
Yeah, I love fiber. When I first started my store, I said that the fiber that paid my rent when I first opened was the Caron watercolors. Because Winnipeg had never seen Caron watercolors before. And so that's what they bought. Without that, because I foolishly opened that store in November. And I don't know about other needlework stores, but November, you have to work to build that up. And
I was going to say, not so smart.
That's right. I mean, it's not so smart because everybody's off to look for, you know, for Christmas gifts. And so with a new needlework shop, it goes, yeah, right. And, you know, you have one or two that shop up, you know, drop in and buy a book. But it's
bleak days.
It was bleak days. And I opened up the store. This is funny. I opened up the store, and about 3 days later, a lady came in, and oh, good, you're like a customer. And across the street from me was the library, and so she comes in and she picks up a book, a Stony Creek book, and she says to me, "I'd like that pattern." And I said, "Oh, okay, fine." And you know, I start to ring it up, and she said, "No, no, I just want the pattern. I don't want the book." And I said, "Well, you have to buy the book. That's the way they're bought." Mm-hmm. And so she picks the book up off the counter, and she says, she's heading out the door, and she says, "I'll be right back." I said, "Where are you going with my book?" I said, "You didn't buy the book." She says, "No, and I don't want to. I don't intend to. I'm going across the library to photocopy what I want."
Oh, my word.
I said, "No, you're not." So she put the book down and she says, "Well, you're sure not going to sell much now, are you?" And I never seen her again.
No, I'm sure you didn't. Oh, my.
So it was like, oh, boy. So I was sure glad when the Winnipeg girls found out that I had watercolors and water lilies, because then they were in and they were buying these up and they were really enjoying them. Yeah. So that was the start. But yeah, I love all the Rainbow Gallery threads. I love the Threadworks threads, what they do if they're overdying. That's great. Kranik, of course. I love Kranik. So it's, you know, there's not too many threads that I don't try. You know, I like the classic ones that are out by, I don't even know who does those ones. They're silk. They're 100% silk, and mm-hmm. but they look like wool. They're beautiful. And I'm a bit of a thread nut.
Yeah, I wonder how many designs have been based off Karen threads.
Well, a lot of mine are. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of mine are, you know, like all the month ones, for example, all have a base of Caron threads in them, one way or another. And their new colors come out and she just keeps producing new ones and they're wonderful.
Yeah. I often think sometimes as important as DMC is to the cross stitch world, Caron may be equally important to the needlepoint world.
Yeah.
In terms of if that, you know, that just a starting point, inspiration point, combinations, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Caron just, and the fact that, you know, she's got them in silk and she's got them in wool or cotton. She's just, you know, you've got that nice balance there. I don't use too many of the nylon, tubulars like Flair and Rainbow Gallery. I don't use many of those ones, and I know that Rachel and Rachelette are two of the Caron ones, but I do use their Antica. I do like that one, but I do like the Kranik braids.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Ribbons. I really like their ribbons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also like the Threadworks, which they use. They use the Kranik to make them, and they also use the classic one as well to over dye. And I love some of their colors too; they're beautiful. They're easier to cut and match, where Caron's gives you that beautiful flow.
Yeah,
where the colors change, they change. Threadworks are lined up. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got so much and so much and so much.
Right.
And both work really well. And the fact that she's got the metallics to go along with the threads worked, you know, dyed in the same manner. You can mix those two together very easily. So both companies I really, really enjoy. I have used other companies for over dyes, but so often they come and go. You know, they're here and then they're gone. But these ones, you know, they've been with me since the 80s. You know, they both started out about the same time. And they were so, they're nice to use.
And as a designer, that's something you have to be aware of all the time, is using threads that are going to be gone in 2 years. Because it causes problems for people if they can't get the thread. Yeah.
Yes, it is. You know, that's one of the things when I was teaching in the store, I would say to people, well, threads come and go, you know, colors come and go. They also change along the way, you know, like even DMC changes along the way. And so you got to be prepared to make sure you buy enough of what you're going to be using. But for somebody who is picking up the pattern, you know, 5 years after it's been published, those threads could be gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or that charm can be gone. It's just, you have to be flexible enough. If you like that pattern, go ahead and do it. And if you've got a good online, good local store, she should be able to help you get the match that you need.
Right.
For that.
And you're a big proponent of finding your own colorways too, helping people.
Yes, yes. I don't know if you've seen my books, but for a lot of my books on the back cover, I will list my materials that they need, the amount that they need, and the color numbers that I use. Then I have your colors. And so you can write your colors out. And if you want to change it and you're not too sure, you should be able to go into a store and say, I want to do this pattern, but I want to do it in purple and blue instead of orange and yellow. And so can you help me? So you pull out all the store should pull out all the colors that you call for and then blend those colors so that you get the right graduation of color, you know, from dark to light. Mm-hmm. For each one of the colors that are called for, so that when you're finished, you will still get the same depth in your picture. You've just got it in the color that you like.
Yeah.
Because after all, I love blue-green. I mean, if you know, if anybody really looked at my patterns, they would notice I love blue-green.
There is a hint of that, yes.
Yeah, but not everybody wants blue green in their home, you know. So, you know, you should be able to, if the design is good, you should be able to take that design and change it to whatever color you want. The only ones in my system that I've got would be the month ones. Just don't call it a month then.
Hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Just don't call it a month. You know, call it with something different. You know, it's just a matter of changing it to your liking and into your own surroundings.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The now I'm going to do a left turn on you because we're going to run out of time. Hardanger.
Now, yes, Hardanger.
We see that a lot in Minnesota because of the Swedish population. And mm-hmm. how is it that you latch onto it? And is it prevalent throughout Canada?
No, but it's prevalent in Manitoba.
Okay.
Basically for the same reason. We've got a large Icelandic and Norwegian and Swedish, Scandinavian population.
Okay.
In Manitoba, a lot of them having migrated up from Minnesota. And it was one of the things that wonderful little guild that I belonged to way back in 1978 and 1979, we did little projects and that. And I thought, gee, I like that. And it's because, again, it's very linear. It's not frou-frou.
Yeah.
There is a masculine and a feminine side of Hardanger, being that because the male wore it as well as the female, because it was mainly used in costuming. It would be used in some household things originally, but originally it was made in their costuming that they did. And so the male would just not have any lacy fillings. It would be, you know, pretty straightforward, just some holes at the cuffs and collars. And so that's and down the pack, the placket of the front of the shirt, where the female would have the little bit more fancier aprons on hers, and she too would have it on her cuffs and her collars and yeah. and maybe on her hat. So they brought the tradition over with them when they came, and it's just expanded up. Originally, they worked on linen in the Hardanger Fjord that is off just off from Bergen, and so they brought that with them quite often in their box of clothing and that the trunk of clothing that they mm-hmm. brought over. And so it just migrated up. And I understand that it was the DMC company that came up with the sort of fabric that we call Hardanger today, which is the double weave Hardanger.
Yes.
And so when I learned to do Hardanger, we worked on that double weave Hardanger. And in the 90s, it was very popular, and we had lots of colors to work with, all kinds of, you know, yellow and green and blue and black and red and purple. And but it slowly just faded back now. So it's hard to find those colors unless a store has them from then. So it's mainly just whites and ecrus. And now people have gone back here in Canada. We've gone back to using linen much more so.
Yeah.
To use, because you get a nice look with the linen. Of course, Janice Love came out with her wonderful books. What were they called? One's called Fundamentals Made Fancy, and the other one, I can't remember what the first one's called. The second one was called Fundamentals Made Fancy, and she did beautiful work. She really promoted Hardanger, and of course, the girls at Nordic Needle.
Right.
In Fargo, right. Really promoted. I don't know how many books. They even published two of mine, and they were wonderful to work with, Sue and Roz, and so it was a shame when the store, you know, closed.
Yeah.
It's not closed. It's online now. They don't have
store. Yeah,
don't have the store anymore. No.
Yeah, my go-to is Yvette Stanton in Australia.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But so your designs these days all on linen then?
Yes, in Hardanger I do all linen now. Or there's another one called Ariosis, which is made by Zweigar too.
Ariosis? Not heard of
that.
Yeah,
A-R-I-O-S-A. It comes in two sizes. 22 is one, and the other one I think is either 18 or 20. A limited color selection, but it's a little coarser looking, and it's a blend of, you got me talking off the top of my head now, I think it's a blend of cotton and poly.
Oh.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like Lagana. It's got more texture.
Okay.
In it, and the holes are more plain. The other fabric I like is a linen, and it's by North Cross, and it's the fabric that Janice Love used in her books. Basics and Beyond is the name of her other book. Sorry about that. Just remembered it.
North Cross though is the fabric.
North Cross linen is the fabric, and I'm
and
trying
Jan-
to think.
Now I got to make some notes. See, you started this now, so I got to make some notes. So Janet. What was Janet's last name?
Love.
Janet Love and her book?
Janice. Yeah, Love.
Okay.
Basics and Beyond is the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And Fundamental Made Fancy is the intermediate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. See, yeah. People accuse me of enabling them. You just did. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, they were done in the 90s. She was often at the trade shows and things like that. I went to as many trade shows as I could, and she was often at the trade shows. And she did some beautiful books. There was more books than that. Those are her two textbook type books that she has. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're interested in Hardanger and don't know how to do it, it's a good way to start.
Well, I am, and I've just done just the basics, just small pieces, and mm-hmm. really enjoyed it. And my problem is I just have too many different things going, and so I don't get to it. But I really enjoy the approach, and I enjoy the result. But I think what really appeals to me is the white on white.
Yes.
Whether you throw in a color here or there is neither here nor there to me. It's that white on white and what you can do to get texture and feel to it that without any color. I just really enjoy that.
Right. It's the simplicity looking of it. That's why, when I taught it to, in the store, and I'd often have men come in, that would be one of the first things they'd go to look at, because it's simple, linear, clean lines. It isn't, like I said, it doesn't have a lot of frou-frou on it. They don't want to see silk ribbons added to it with little roses. They don't want to see Brazilian on it. They just like it just the way it is. The clusters are nice and neat and tidy. The cutting is good. It looks great, with a little bit of woven bars, maybe some dove's eyes, but don't fill it up too much.
That's as far as it goes. A dove's eye, that's it.
That's as far as it goes, but it really appeals. It really appeals. It's something that I've always noticed that men really like, because they look at it and they see the linear structure of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really appeals to them. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is for me. I've not studied it psychologically, but I just enjoy doing it.
Yes, it's a nice piece of structural. Yeah. And it's something you can take with you very easily. It's the one that you tuck up, you fold it up, put it in your purse. You need a ball of white and a ball of cream or
right.
Number 5 and number 8 is what I mean. We'll have to clean that one up. So you take it in your purse with just your fabric, your needle, a pair of scissors, and a number 5 and a number 8 thread.
Yep.
And you don't have to have a great big bag or anything else. It's just nice and tidy.
Yeah, pretty straightforward, but beautiful stuff. The end result is just so beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teaching. You do a lot of teaching, and I want to make sure, I want to learn about, so your cyber class that you're going to do in 2020, A&G cyber class, Making Stitches Work for You. Tell me what goes on with that.
Well, this one's going to be a little different, and I know they really wondered about it, too, because most projects for cyber are a project. You sit down and you do the project, and the teacher tells you what to do. The students all get the instructions, and then they go out and buy their supplies that they need to make this piece. But for Making Stitches Work for You, the approach is there that you can make whatever you want. I'm going to be giving them an instruction book where the first lesson is how to calculate out your stitches, what makes one stitch work well with another, and what you need to consider. So, is your stitch 12 by 12, or is your stitch 6 by 6, or is your stitch 4 by 4, 2 by 2? So you have to learn to realize that if you have a stitch that's 12 by 12, you can then next door to it put in 3 stitches 4 by 4 to create the same size.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can put in 6 stitches 2 by 2 if you want a narrow, a narrow effect. So you want to see how the stitches fit together. You have to also know what kind of a project you want to do. And these people can do whatever project they want. They can use whatever fibers they want. So I put in also 2 samples. Matter of fact, they've been down at Houston this past week at seminar, so people can sort of get an idea of what the course is. And they're long, narrow pillows that I did. So they're just done in stripes. And one is just done where I started at one side and I just worked across the whole thing and just put in stitches that I enjoyed doing, all done in creams and whites.
Oh.
No other color, just creams and whites. Hmm. Then the other one I did, I took and put a fancy stitch right down the center. And then I built out from there. So if the stitch on one side is 12, then the stitch on the other side of it is 12. If it's 2, it's 2, but it's not necessarily the same stitches, so that you don't get that mirror image or symmetrical, but you sort of get the symmetrical look. So it's up to you. So the students can create whatever they want. I'm also going to be teaching them how to insert if they want something that's a little more interesting. So they've got their stripes, but you know, they could put a triangle in partway through, up in the left-hand corner or over in the right-hand corner, you know, so they could do some inserts. They could do whatever they want, really.
But do it so it fits within the overall design and doesn't look out of whack. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right, yeah. It could fit in. It has to cover the right number of stitches in all directions,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, yeah, they can play with it however they want. But, you know, there's lots of stuff for them to do. And so the first lesson is going to be just get the layout of what you feel like doing. And if you really don't, you know, because some people just can't. You know, they just can't figure that out. And they're going, oh, I've wasted my money on this class. No, you haven't. You've got two patterns there. Choose one of those two patterns and get started. And so in the next lesson, they're going to get started. And if they haven't got their own, then they can go in and say, okay, I'm going to do Carolyn's design. So I'm going to put this stitch in. And all I've done is I've listed what stitches I've put in and how wide those stitches are. So they can start and they'll go, oh, but I know of another stitch I want to put in. So instead, as long as that stitch fits into that row, put that stitch in. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it my way. Maybe you want to use some color. So there is a color component included in the course so that they can use color in their course. So they're going to work through. It's four lessons long. And hopefully, you know, they can make a great big pillow. They can make a small pillow. They can make a needle case. They can, you know, they can make a box top. Yeah. You know, they can do whatever they want. They can make it the size that they want, just so that they get the experience of, because many people take all kinds of courses these days,
right.
But they don't take the type of courses that I did, where, you know, I got a page, and on that page, it was just listed, you know, do rice stitch, you got four stitches, do up the lysis, do up the charting, you know, that kind of thing. Then the next section was the history, and you had to do the history, look up all about what, you know, Mary Queen of Scots did, you know. So, I mean, I was reading textbooks and everything to, you know, get all the information that I required, you know. We looked up the Bayeux tapestry and did an essay on that. So there was that part. There was also then designing part. So you had four parts. Can't remember what the first one was, but the last one was always the designing portion. And they didn't give you charts. You had to find them in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember they gave me one chart one time. Can't think what it was. Sumac. I had to find the sumac stitch. I couldn't find it in any of my books. And of course, like you said, there was no computer.
Right,
so I phoned my girlfriend in Regina, because I was in the Yukon. Phoned my girlfriend in Regina and said to her, "You've taken the course just ahead of me. Where do I find the sumac stitch?" She says, "I'll send you the book."
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this class will help people get over that mental hurdle of breaking out of the prescribed chart design.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so that if they want to change something, they can. And the nice thing about the cyber is, you know, you can write a question and I will answer you. But at the same time, everybody else can also read that question and answer and go, "Oh, gee, am I ever glad he asked that?" You know,
yeah.
So that, you know, that it will help, you know, because, I mean, I can't put everything. My book is about, the booklet they get is about 60 pages, and there's a large glossary in it as well. So for all the stitches and that we talk about, there is the glossary to go along with it. So they get a picture of the stitch and they get a chart on how to do the stitch and something like, say, the Wolnetto or the cloverleaf Wolnetto or, you know, Amadeus, those kinds of stitches. I do one by step by step on how to do it.
Uh-huh.
And some of the pictures also show, you know, one or two, like how to start the work.
Yeah.
You know, same with, you know, I do different steps of it. One of the ones I spend a lot of time on is the raised chain stitch, because in canvas work, people don't use the the raised chain. It's, you know, they don't use Van Dyke. They don't use raised chain. So I've got pictures of how to do those stitches. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have them in the book, you know, if I don't have enough of a breakdown, I have some on my computer that I can then send to the students, you know, as well, so that they get some extra work on the computer, that because you can't put absolutely everything in the book. So, you know, if they need some extra help, I can do that, or I can sit and do it and make sure they get it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got to wrap up here, which I hate because I got a million other questions, but before we go, Teaching Peace on the Edge, of all your work, that one, just, I keep going back to that. Tell me about that. Where did that come from? Because it's such a unique combination of stitches, and then it looks like you have trees and the mountains on the left. And folks, I'll put the picture up so you can see it. But that's such a unique piece.
Well, thank you. I love that piece. It's the piece I taught in 2017 in Newfoundland. I live part-time in Manitoba, part-time in Quebec. So I drive back and forth across Ontario along the northern shore of Lake Superior, which I just love. I love Lake Superior. I think it's one of the most beautiful places. And there's a Canadian painter in the Group of Seven. I don't know if you've heard of the Group of Seven.
No.
But we had a Group of Seven in the 1930s, 40s, 50s of painters that got together and painted. And one of the painters is Lorne Harris. And he painted a piece of the lone tree along Lake Superior in November in a wind, you know, like, and it's just bare and it's rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the tree portion comes from. And the tree I've worked more in crewel type stitches, you know, you use Van Dyke and chain and, and split and that to create the bark effect. And then just nice long straight stitches for the rock because it's wet and shiny, you know, from the water splashing up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a very plain, very November-type gray sky behind. Then one of the other artists I've always admired, and really he's not just an artist, is Frank Lloyd Wright, which is, you know, very popular in the States, not so much in Canada.
There's some talent there, yes.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And so that other side represents Frank Lloyd Wright. So what I am showing
is... I see it. Okay.
Yeah, so what I'm showing there is nature opposed to man.
Ah.
So it's... I've done another one, and I don't think I'll ever publish it or do that. And I've used Ted Harrison, who is another one of our Canadian artists from the West Coast and the Yukon, and he used to do absolutely phenomenal skies of color. So I used his sort of color swirls of the skies. Again, I've used another tree, and this one is actually from the backyard that's in Quebec. And then I've used not a Frank Lloyd Wright type, but it's really deep and dark. Mm-hmm. And it sort of is, again, tranquility against chaos. So I'm getting a little too
but that one will never get published unless everybody and their brother writes to you and says please publish it, and then you'll have to. That's how that works.
If I don't take a picture of it, then they don't know. But I've done another one called Mystery of the Forest, and it's just a small one. And I'm going to send that in for a possibility for a course for EAC in 2021.
Yeah.
And it's based on Emily Carr, who is another one of our West Coast artists. And it's all done in greens and blues and a little bit of gold. And it's a small one. So there'll be another one sort of similar to On the Edge. But, you know, I mean, life is like being on the edge. You know, it's... you could easily slip into that surly Lake Superior.
Yep. Well, that's a beautiful piece, I have to say. It really is.
Oh, well, thank you. That one's being taught by next March through cyber pointers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So everybody can have a shot at it then.
Yeah, if you're a cyber pointer member, you can sign up for it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Carolyn, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Well, I really
this
enjoyed
has been
it.
Fun. I have to say I was a little nervous, and it's actually come out okay.
No, I knew you were, and I was not worried at all. That's just been a blast to talk to you. Thanks so much. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll be back.